Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest Nick Nicolino and Victoria Collette from the Clearinghouse Exchange. Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you?
Yeah, great to have you guys on the program. First of all, how did you guys get together and start the Clearinghouse?
Okay, I'll give that to Victoria.
Okay. Oh, I'll get that part right. Okay. We were dating at the time, and we had both wanted to get into our own business, and we were brainstorming, and I had this vision from my youth always wanting to have a consignment store. And I'm an interior designer, so home consignment is a perfect fit. So Nick was very eager to get involved, and so we started looking for spaces, and we found a fabulous space up in Southampton here. Yep, we started here in Southampton.
So initially you started from Southampton.
That's right.
And now you're in Greenport, though.
Yes.
And what happened? It just expanded, so you needed more space, or you just...
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, as the economy was going great, we expanded to the North Fork, and we covered everything on the North and South Fork. And then when the economy contracted, we decided to leave the Southampton space, go up to and just continue on with the Greenport store. But we still come down where we're in the Hamptons all the time.
Right. And so you do the South Fork. Also, your business is booming here also in the South Fork.
Most of our business is actually on the South Fork.
Now, were you guys transplants, or did you grow up here on the East End?
Well, I grew up in Nassau County.
Okay.
So the East End is actually new to me, but it wasn't as far as a trip for me as it was for Victoria, who came from California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I came out here to be near my daughter and my grandchildren. So they're here in Southampton, and they live in Sag Harbor. And my daughter has her own. We're into consignment. She has Colette Home Consignment. She has a consignment business as well.
Oh, so. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I have a running joke that nothing is resold on the East End unless a Colette gets a cut of it. So.
So tell us exactly, what does the Clearinghouse do?
Well, we are a home consignment outlet where we sell retail. It is resale, actually, but we do have an outlet that is for people to shop in, a beautifully designed store, a high-end, and we do keep our quality up. The other part of our service is that we do estate tag sales for folks. Then after that, we also have a clean-out service for people that are moving and they need the house cleaned out, whatnot. And then we also work pretty hand-in-hand with a number of charities in the area, local charities, where we're able to recycle things back into needy families and groups. We work quite a bit with the retreat. And then Habitat for Humanity, we're able to give things. So it's really a full-service operation from anything that your home would need to liquidate the contents, move it out after a sale, or just take in a few pieces.
Now, let me ask you a question. Victoria, you said your background before we were talking was in interior design. Do you also offer the service of staging?
Well, we have, but it is not something that we're currently doing.
Okay.
You do utilize it, and if people need it, she's open to discussion. She does lots of interior design work, so people, as they buy things and they need assistance, she does that because she's an amazing decorator. Our main connection to the real estate world is that when the house is being sold, everything, obviously, you're going into closing, and then they go, okay, now what do we do with all of these things? Because typically, it's a second home, and you have all of this extra things that need to be dispersed of one way or another. So we basically have what we call the three-tier system. One is the first preference is to do the estate sale, tag sale, and clean out as much as possible with that. And then we come in and we do the clean out, and that's when we go, okay, what's available for consignment or what's available for donation? And then we disperse of it then. And then we always make the closing for everybody. And we'll do it broom clean, get everybody straightened out. So it's soup to nuts. We don't leave anything to chance, and that's why we've been the ones that typically are called in for the really big projects, because we've done some amazing, big projects for people, because nobody else is just really equipped to do it.
Right. I've seen where some people come in, do the tag sale, and there's furniture left, and then the owners are saying, what do I do with this?
Correct.
Yeah, that's a great point, because actually we are able to do all things because we do have the consignment outlet. People aren't left holding the bag, so to speak, because as Nick mentioned, most of our clients out here are second homeowners. They don't want those contents necessarily to go back to their primary residence or to another home. So they're really stuck with it becoming a liability when they need to close the house if it's sold. So it's a huge benefit to realtors.
Now, you were saying before you work with the retreat. Is that the charity No Place Like Home? Can you elaborate a little bit about that? Or
What we did was we developed our own charity called No Place Like Home to operate as a clearinghouse, so to speak, to other charities. So what happens is we are the receiver of the goods coming out of the houses, and then what we like to do is work with other charities that have vetted the people that will receive it. So we know the retreat. We love those guys because they do a great job of that. So we're available for them. It actually has gotten pretty involved because what will happen is they will ask for something for the actual shelter, say, you know, sofas or TV or something like that, and then we'll look for it and try to provide that for them. But also you have the women that are coming out of the shelter. And they're setting up an apartment or a little home or something. So what happens is not only do we do that, but Victoria actually helps them. She meets the person. She goes over it. She actually decorates for them to whatever extent that she can. But we don't just give them things and say, you're on your own. We actually help them set it up, and we deliver it for them, and we do all of those services as well. So we're very proud of that because it works. It's something that we say it's right in our backyard, and it's something that we can do, and we like to do it.
Wow, that's pretty incredible what you guys are doing. I think that's fantastic. Why do you think the clearinghouse gets chosen over other estate sale companies?
It's really because of our full service. And I think our reputation for doing the finer homes.
Because we have 10 years doing this, and we've been on News 12 and in New York Times and in magazines and Newsday. And
Today Show, too.
The Today Show and East Hampton Star and Southampton Press and Suffolk Times. So everybody knows about us, and they know our reputation is excellent. You know, we have 10 years behind. We originated in the Hamptons. And so that's it. Like you said, there's people where it's become a big thing now to do the estate sales. So you have these little startup companies, and God bless them, you know, they're performing a service, but they're not set up the way we are because we have the truck and we have the store and we have all of the guys and the crews and we can do the full cleanouts. So we just have the resources to get it done.
For an example, John, let me explain. When we go and do a tag sale, we have a box truck on premises where we can make deliveries right on the spot. So if a person buys a large piece of furniture from the home, we have our guys right there that will load it on the truck and deliver it. A lot of the smaller tag sale companies
don't have that.
And like Nick said, we support our small companies, and we love every entrepreneur out there trying to, you know, get their idea out into the business world. But those kinds of services really help the homeowner where they don't have to worry about. Another example is because we do have guys that come with us. These are our workers. They will bring furniture down from a second floor. No walls are banged. No carpets are ruined. So if you you're selling a big, beautiful dresser or an armoire, and the customer that bought it's trying to lug it down with his 16-year-old son, damage occurs to the house.
Right.
So we have this infrastructure in our crew is fantastic, and they help people put things in their cars. And it's not a couple of people that are sitting there, you know, taking your money and, you know, managing that part. Right. But then on the back end, if the homeowner is stuck with a lot of revenue and inventory left over that is the furniture items, we're able to process those as well. So the homeowner has no worries, none whatsoever, and that's very valuable.
That is. It sounds that way. How can somebody reach you guys, by the way?
They can reach us through the store, which is the 631-477-6262, or they can reach us via the email, which is either Nick or Victoria at, and the letters for the store, which is tchx.net.
Fantastic. It's been great having both of you here today. This is John Christopher broadcasting to the Hamptons, the North Fork, and Southern Connecticut on the only NPR station on Long Island, WPPB 88.3 FM. We'll be right back after a short break with our next guest, Fox Business News personality, Shah Galani.
Support for 88.3 comes from Sotheby's International Realty, local experts worldwide. With over 100 international offices, Sotheby's has 4 Hamptons locations in Southampton, Bridgehampton, East Hampton, and Sag Harbor. Learn more at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Shah Galani. Shah, I want to welcome you to the show, but I want to tell the listening audience, you know, who you are. And you're a resident of Sag Harbor, Miami Beach. You were in a hedge. You were a hedge fund manager, and you're now the editor of the Capital Wave Forecast and a regular guest on Fox Business News every Wednesday, and also on CNBC and Bloomberg. So I just want to welcome you back, Shah, and I'm so happy to have you with us.
Well, thanks, John. It's a pleasure being back with you.
Shah, I'm going to cut right in because, you know, a lot of the people I hear on the news is that we're at the beginning of a mini recession. What do you think about that?
Well, I'd like to almost turn that question around and ask you, but I think I have a sense of where your question is coming from, and you mentioned the media. To me and to a lot of analysts who really look at the metrics in terms of the economy and growth, et cetera, versus a recession possibility, the recession that everybody fears, whether it's a mini recession or the pending recession that's just around the corner, is nothing more than a recession narrative that's being put forward by the media, including the financial media. And I think it's just partly pressure on the media to conduct some kind of exciting front page news to bring in readers and or have people tune into the channels. But anybody who is looking at the market, anybody who was actually analyzing the metrics, the econometric numbers, would tell you there is no mini recession in sight. There is certainly no recession in sight. And let me just qualify that by saying, definitionally, a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. That means contraction, two quarters in a row of contracting GDP. That's nowhere in sight. The GDP figures just came out for this quarter, and we're looking at 1.9%. That's above consensus estimates, slightly below the 2% we saw in the second quarter, but still well above trend. So there's nothing on any horizon that I can look at based on every metric and all the metrics I do look at that points to a recession or a mini recession or anything even close to that. So global growth is growing beautifully according to the IMF. It's around 3% this year, which is well above trend. GDP in the United States is going forward, not backwards. And frankly, with some of the other metrics, unemployment in the country at a 50-year low, personal consumption has been solid, and we know that the consumer is two-thirds of the economy. So with stronger consumer consumption and GDP growth continuing to reflect that, there's absolutely no recession in sight. It's just a negative narrative, and I think people should just put it to the back, in the back burner, and move forward.
Well, you know, it's really great to hear that. It's such a positive, uplifting thing you're saying. And it does seem that way. The media just seems to, you know, want to harbor this fear, you know, be a fear monger of sorts, you know, to and people, you know, get anxious. And with that, so with this narrative, this recession narrative, does the market really even care about it?
Well, now that is a good question. The answer is yes, it does. That negative narrative, that recession narrative does impact the market. And we saw that certainly this year. After the swoon from October to December, the markets recovered very nicely. The recession narrative kicked in when markets didn't make new all-time highs. And what happened then was folks said, look, we've come so far, but we haven't quite reached new highs again. Therefore, we have a problem up ahead. And bond prices started to reflect nervousness. When bond yields were getting hammered lower, which means bond prices were going up, the recession narrative was loud and clear, front burner, news media, and it was all about bond prices. Higher bond prices, lower yields, reflecting nervousness. People were getting out of stocks and investing in bonds because they saw a recession ahead, and the Fed was going to have to cut rates. Therefore, investors were trying to get ahead of the Fed and buy bonds before they lowered yields even more. A lot of rubbish. That was, and I wrote about this, John, extensively in my Wall Street Insights and Indictments.com newsletter. That was nothing more than a fantastically orchestrated trade by a lot of big bond traders. It was just a brilliant trade, driving yields low by buying treasury bonds, forcing the Fed to cut. And that's exactly what the Fed did. The bond traders that did that, and there are a lot of them that got involved in that trade, it became a momentum trade, scored billions of dollars in gains. It was just a beautifully executed Wall Street trade. And the public fell right into it, the media fell right into it, and the Fed Reserve fell right into it. But there was no recession. Again, that was the narrative. But the markets reacted. Equities sold off. Then they recovered. And then they sold off again in the summer when the narrative again became front burner, again with yields being front page news. Oh, my gosh, here's the recession coming again. The Fed's going to have to cut. And, of course, what did we do? We bounced right back. So, yes, in terms of negative narratives, especially the recession narrative, yeah, it makes a difference to equity investors because they make their long-term investment decisions based on prospects for recession and positive GDP growth. So reflecting back on the previous question, investors should just put aside the any recession fears, move forward, make your investments. If you're a long-term holder of equities, get in, stay in, add to positions because the market's going a lot higher.
Are you almost saying like you should be a contrarian? In other words, going against what the mainstream media is saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the mainstream media, financial news media, are most of the time just delivering news. And it's not even so much real good economic news. It's really financial entertainment, I call it. And there's just a lot of it. And so they have to, so it's content. It's about content. And everyone's got an opinion, and most of them really don't matter. You want to understand what matters. You clear the smoke away and look at the actual numbers, the GDP numbers, consumer spending, those kinds of numbers really tell you what's going on. And if you want to know which direction the market's going, simply look at the proper economic numbers, and the market is going to follow suit. And the Federal Reserve is going to do what it's going to do, which is always back markets. And so we've got that backdrop. And so if you're a long-term investor, I'm saying that the air is clear. It doesn't mean there aren't going to be hiccups ahead, but right now the air is clear. If you're a long-term holder, there's plenty of upside room in the market. I said about 2.5 years ago, I made a prediction on several channels I was on, and I said that the market was going to double, and I still believe that. It doesn't matter what happens in terms of in between now and, say, 5 years. The market is going to go up, and I say double because there's more capital being created every single day globally, and there are fewer and fewer stocks to trade every single day because of mergers and acquisitions, because of buybacks, etc. So you have more capital chasing fewer stocks. Markets have nowhere to go but up in the long term.
What are your thoughts on 2020? It sounds very positive what you're saying.
Well, in 2020, I think it's going to be a hiccup year. There's because it's an election year, presidential election cycle years are volatile enough. But we've got the recession narrative in the back. I think Democrats are going to heat that pot up and try and stir that pot by bringing that fear forward. And I think we're going to see a lot of positioning in terms of negative narratives from the Democrats. And I think, obviously, the other side of that is going to be what Republicans are going to do, point to the strong economy and the strong market. And investors are going to get kind of caught up in that. And additionally, perhaps equally important to the political future in 2020 is what's going to happen with the U.S.-China trade war. We don't have any resolution there, and that's going to be front and center, too. So earnings, we know, have done well. I think there may be peak for a while. They may slow down. Growth may slow down. And 2020, I think, is going to be a tough year, marked by my favorite word, volatility.
Oh, wonderful. Shah, how can somebody get in touch with you, for your financial acumen?
Well, my blog of Wall Street Insights and Indictments.com is where I write a lot of stuff. It's a free newsletter, and I'm always commenting on everything from the market to certain players in the market to the good, the bad, and the ugly.
What is the newsletter? What is it again?
It's Wall Street Insights and Indictments.com, and I name names there, John. So okay. I do a lot of muckraking about bad actors and point to a lot of good opportunities in the market, too.
Fantastic. Shah Galani, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life, broadcasting on WPPB 88.3 FM, the only NPR station on Long Island, reaching the East End in Southern Connecticut. We'll be right back after the short break with our next guest, writer for The Independent, Heather Buchanan. Hi, this is John Christopher, and welcome back to Real Life. Today I have as my guest the writer for The Independent, Heather Buchanan. Heather, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful that you're here. You know, you're full of energy. You're full of life. I love seeing that. And besides, you're such a fantastic writer, Heather. I want to talk about a recent article you did in The Independent. But before we even talk about that, let's talk about you. Have you been a writer all your life?
You know, I was a reader before I was a writer. I have a twin sister, and we auditioned for a Kodak commercial.
Wow.
And there was a table with, like, a camera, some pencils, and a book. And they were like, well, which would you pick? And I said, the book. And they're like, all right, thank you, next. So
they didn't want a reader?
Yeah. So I had my nose in a book since I could read. So, but then I think when I was in college, I started writing, and then I was living in L.A., and just started a creative writing habit, and
so wasn't
that,
like,
led me on a journey.
That wasn't like 4 years old or something. You just started, picked up a pen, and people said, Heather, you should be a writer. It wasn't wasn't just like that.
I don't think they'll ever be going back to my grade school essays. No problem there.
Speaking of being born, where were you born?
In New York City, but I grew up in
a native New Yorker. You're a native New
Yorker? Well, we moved out of the city relatively early. The beautiful thing is that my dad had actually bought truly a shack on the ocean in Sagaponack way, way, way back when. So this was a beautiful summer haven for me and my family. And the rest of the time we were in Darien, Connecticut.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Good. So, okay, so that's how you got to the Hamptons. So you spent a lot of time from your childhood, but was there an interim? You said you went to California. You went to California? Were you living there at a time?
Yeah, I started out going to Northwestern University, and I got my undergraduate and graduate degree in communications. Moved out to L.A., was working as an independent film producer, and found it really hard to get material. So then I started writing.
So you wrote your screenplays, or?
Yeah, I started that. When I first moved back here to the Hamptons, I did a really small independent movie called On the Rocks, which I wrote and directed, which was great fun.
Wow. So that that leads me into the other thing, that you were involved with the Hamptons Film Festival. So that explains that tie-in. Wow. So do you ever feel like you want to write the screenplay that's going to be, you know, shot and become a blockbuster?
You know, it's really nice to have sort of the different skill sets of whether it's a column in The Independent, Kiss and Tell, or whether it's a feature story in Hamptons Cottage and Gardens. I have done screenplay, and right now I'm working on a book. So it's really nice to have all of these different, you know, avenues and media so that I never get bored, because it's always something different.
So you say, that's funny, because I was going to ask you, being a writer, have you ever thought about writing a book? So you're working on one now?
Yes, I am.
Can you give us a little preview, or is that you want to keep
it
under wraps?
I'll just say that it's a bit about real-life witchcraft.
I like that. Now, is that contemporary, or is it going back to the Salem?
You know, I've done an awful lot of research on the history of it. But this one's going to be contemporary, with a little bit of hints of the past and how our character gets to this place.
Oh, fabulous. When do you think it'll be completed?
Not soon enough. It depends. If there's a lot of snow this winter and I stay inside, sooner rather than later.
Now, are you the type of writer who puts a lot of notes up on the wall so you have an idea of where you're going? I mean, because writing a book is not an easy task.
Yeah, for me, it ranges from sort of like an official file on my computer to things written in a notebook to like a cocktail napkin with a lip liner. I was like, oh, I've got it. Wait, I got to write that down.
Wow. So you were talking about writing, and that's why I wanted to have you on the program. So you know how to write cursive.
Yes. You know, when I was growing up in school, penmanship was hugely important, and my penmanship is excellent, like seriously excellent. And I thought it would get me so much further in life than it actually has. But I was thinking about cursive, and I even had to ask around, like, is it even still taught in school anymore?
No, it's not.
In some places, it is, but in many places, it's not. And I was saying, you know, we're at the point now where it used to be your signature was so important. And now somebody just puts a screen in front of you, and you take your finger, and you just, like, put an X. You know, that used to be sort of what the illiterate people would do because they didn't have their handwriting skills. And now we're just, you know, putting a squiggly on an iPad. That's it.
You know, that article you wrote in The Independent saying deciphering a person's signature's energy. I thought that was so right on. Can you explain a little further on that when you're saying about the energy?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, that goes a little bit, ties in with the real life witchcraft. You're always trying to see what carries somebody's energy, and that's very particular to them. So somebody's handwritten signature, it's literally, it's done by them, their hand to paper. It's their particular signature, you know, which some people can forge, but they're not supposed to, that carries their energy. So if you have that, like maybe you want to do a love spell, maybe you want to do a curse, be careful where your signature is going.
Wow, I never even thought about it. That's an interesting thing you're saying. You bring up a lot of good points on the article too, but we're not doing cursive. Do you think that's good or bad? I mean, you know, people not being able to sign their names. Do you think it's like the end of our civilization? That's like...
it's in the line. There are probably other ones ahead of it. I do. I think, you know, it's the general part of everybody moving towards the technology and not even speaking on the phone, but just texting. You know, I joke that you know, a text, like we have to do K, because okay takes too long to write.
Right.
So I think we're getting awfully abbreviated in the way we're communicating, which can lead to so many problems, miscommunications. It's very hard to say, you know, your sense of humor, your satire, unless you're like, oh, yeah, joke, ha ha, you know, smiley face.
Right.
And cursive actually originated because they wanted writing to flow so that they could get it done in a smoother and faster manner. You know, back before people, you know, had typewriters.
Right.
Yeah, so it had a mission of being the smooth and kind of flowing, quickly flowing way of communicating. And I do kind of personally miss it, quite frankly. You know, I still have some hand, you know, my dad isn't with me anymore, but I kept some little notes that he wrote to me. And his writing is so distinct, and it makes me still feel close to him.
Wow, that is interesting. What do you think about thank you notes? We don't, I don't see them anymore.
Yeah, you know, I think part of the problem is that we don't have each other's, as we say, snail mail. So often we don't have somebody's address. We only have their email or their phone number to, you know, text them or their, you know, DM them on Instagram. But I think there's something so lovely and appreciative and old fashioned. And I almost feel like I have to see what the updated Emily post is. Like, is it okay to send an email thank you note? In certain occasions, yes. Certain occasions, no.
Yeah, but so, you know, I love it when somebody sends a thank you note. You know, it's like 2 minutes out of their life, but still it's so meaningful. And we don't see that.
That's also, remember when we had a thing called stationery?
I forgot about that.
Right? Like maybe monogrammed or, right? Yeah.
Times have changed. Anyway, Heather, yeah. It's been a delight having you on the program. How can somebody get in touch with you, correspond with you?
My column, Kiss and Tell, is in The Independent. You can pick up the paper. It's my email is there. It's kissedandtellhb@gmail. It's also online at indieeastend.com if you look up Kiss and Tell. And the email's there, and I would be happy to hear from people.
Wonderful. And I have to say that your articles are fantastic. So keep up the good work.
Thank you so
much.
And
I'm looking for that novel, too.
Stay tuned.
You got it.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.